Who do you choose to mentor? You know, do you choose someone like you, or if you, you know, if you're a white, cisgender, heterosexual male over 45, incredibly privileged, and hope you all know that, do you mentor young women, a young trans woman, a non-binary person? I can tell you, you're going to learn more from that in a two-way experience than you're going to learn from mentoring someone that's just a younger version of you.
Welcome to Nouscast, a podcast from Nous Group. I'm Deborah May, a principal of Nous. For anyone who isn't familiar with Nous, we're an award-winning, Australian-owned management consulting firm of 400 people across Australia and in London. This year, Nous is celebrating its 20th anniversary. To mark the occasion, we've launched Beyond 2020, an event series that will explore the big ideas and stories shaping Australia's future, featuring leading thinkers from Australia and around the world. You'll be able to catch each of these discussions right here on Nouscast. In this episode, we're exploring diversity and the power of inclusion as a means of tapping into the unheard, unsaid, and unseen in Australian workplaces. The core question we reflect on is how we can tap into the wide, varied range of experiences, backgrounds, and expertise to deliver the best possible outcomes for organisations, our communities, and our nation. And equally importantly, how to ensure that we create and sustain equal opportunities for individuals of all backgrounds to contribute, participate, and achieve their potential. The discussion you'll hear today is hosted by Nous founder and managing director Tim Orton and myself, and features Kevin Stone, CEO of the Victorian Advocacy League for Individual Disability, and Ro Allen, the Victorian Commissioner for Gender and Sexuality. We'll feature our two other speakers, Justin Muhammad, the Victorian Commissioner for Aboriginal Children and Young People, and Jemana El-Matra, CEO of the Australian Muslim Women's Centre for Human Rights, in part two of this episode. And now, speaking from Nous in Melbourne, here's the host for the evening, Tim Orton.
Thank you for joining us. My name's Tim Orton. I'm the Managing Director of Nous, and I'm delighted to have you here. Of course, we meet this evening on the land of Kulin Nation, and I pay my respects to Elders past and emerging. We've called this session Untapped, Unheard, Unsaid, which I think is a very eloquent way, perhaps much more eloquent than talking about diversity and inclusion. How do we tap into the range of experiences, the range of backgrounds, and the range of expertise that help us as organisations deliver better outcomes for our customers and our clients, but also make sure that we're creating opportunities for individuals throughout Australia? So to do that, we've brought together five experts. Firstly, my colleague and Deb May, who joined us because we wanted to bring somebody into our team who was expert in diversity and inclusion. And so Deb has been a diversity inclusion or an untapped, unheard, unsaid expert for 20 years, working primarily in the Commonwealth. So we're delighted that she's now based in Victoria so that she can work with our Melbourne clients as well as our Commonwealth clients. And she has an expertise in how you work with clients to address unconscious bias, how you can tap the full expertise, breadth of difference in your organisation, but also how you attract the difference. And I have to say, since Deb's joined us, it's been a learning journey for me, because I came, I think, from a generation where your approach was, we'll be blind to difference, which means that it will all be the same for everyone. We've learned over the last year and two and three, and Deb's really brought this out for us, that we need to actively seek diversity and we need to actively include them. This is a really rich panel that I think we're going to learn from. Sit back, listen, take it in, and be provoked, I think. Thanks, Deb.
Thank you, everyone, and welcome to tonight's event. I am so pleased and delighted that this event has provoked already so much interest. And I'm also delighted to that our panelists have agreed to participate and act as a lure for you all, because I know that this is a really important conversation to have. And my hope, as Kim said, that tonight we will be provoked. It will be provocative. It's an opportunity for us to potentially lean in and listen and hear about some of the experiences that are often unseen, unheard, and unsaid. I've been very, very pleased to notice the increasing levels of awareness of what diversity is. And of the need to actually create more opportunities and improve the lives for a broader demographic group. And indeed, I know many of you in the room are working to address disadvantage, to improve the lives and opportunities of some of our most vulnerable people. And NOUSE, indeed, is working alongside many of you to improve the lives and opportunities for people with a disability, for Indigenous people, for young people, for the aged, for people in our health system, and many other cohorts. And all that work is really, really important. It's really important. However, it's not enough. It has not yet translated into real change. It has not yet translated into opportunities for people of different demographic backgrounds, the unseen, unheard, unsaid, to move into positions of leadership and power. We still only have 9 women who head up the ASX 200. Indeed, if your name is Peter, Andrew, or John, you have more chance of getting a gig there than you do if you are a woman. We only have 4% of ASX directors who are from non-European backgrounds. And while we continue to have a very narrow demographic slice of our population making decisions on behalf of all the population, a very diverse and multicultural population, we can't have a fair and just society. We are unable to meet and resolve some of the most complex geopolitical, social, economic, environmental issues that we face today, globally and nationally. So we need to translate our efforts into working with different slices of the population into creating a much more integrated whole. We need to actually understand, appreciate, and meet this difference and link it together and leverage it so that we can all benefit. And what gets in the way? We have all been neurologically primed and wired to be wary of difference, to value, recognise and reward those that fit in, that conform to how we do things around here, that look like someone who should be doing those things around here. We have all learned to privilege some over others, indeed, starting with ourselves. Now, the thing is that when we privilege one part of ourselves and suppress another part of ourselves, what we tend to do is when we see it, that part that we've devalued because we've learned that that's the case, is we devalue it in others. And thus we create us and them. We other people, just as we other parts of ourselves. Yeah. And that in itself creates this paradigm of division. We've learned over the years to categorize, to divide, to label, to value according to often inaccurate barometers of capability and merit, according to what we see, observable clues that are informed with how someone looks, what gender they have, how someone speaks, what physical form they have, what costume they're wearing, how they look, how able-bodied they are, the colour of their skin, their race. All of these things are markers and divide us from each other. And inclusion's not about division. It's about addition. It's about expanding the space, creating more. And we need to start with ourselves and recognise our own inclinations to divide, to devalue. Because unless we intentionally include, we unintentionally exclude. To become whole, we need to integrate all of the parts of ourselves, individually and collectively. We need to accept, accommodate, and allow all of us to be with all of us. And for that to happen, those of us who have been privileged need to step back and make space and allow room for everyone. Everyone. So becoming an inclusive and integrated whole society starts with us. It requires us to notice what we're doing in the moment, with whom and how. It requires us to notice the inclinations of our mind in dividing us from them And it requires us to step back, make space for us and them to work and live side by side together so that we can achieve our full individual and collective potential, and so that we can thrive together, so that we can together reduce inequality for all, that we can actually leverage the difference and the diversity that our populations and our organisations bring, and that we can all together be a much richer, much more vibrant, much more productive, and much more well-integrated whole. We need to understand and accept and see and recognise that we are all complicit in this. We are all required to create a much greater space. But first of all, we have to let the difference in. We have to understand that there is no us or them. It's us and them. Whilst you're listening, I'm going to encourage you to reflect on your own experiences and reflect on what resonates and reflect on what you hear and consider what you might do to allow more space for everyone around you at work and the communities that you work are part of. So I'm going to start by inviting Kevin to speak, to share as much or as little as you wish, and welcome and thank you.
The touch point for both of us was this understanding that inclusion begins in here. It's not this acceptance of, us and them. It's an understanding that they are actually us, and the barriers we put up are actually barriers in our own hearts, and we deny parts of ourselves when we deny the uniqueness of others. I've been the CEO of Valid for 30 years. We started the organisation back in 1988, myself and a group of other parents and people with disability, and subtitle is Victorian Advocacy League for Individuals with Disabilities, Fighting for Inclusion, Advocating for Inclusion. I'm also chair of Inclusion Australia, formerly the National Council on Intellectual Disability. We have organisations in each state across the country, and the job of our organisation nationally is to advocate for inclusion. We are part of an organisation called Inclusion International, the largest NGO representing people with intellectual disability around the world, lobbying at the UN, the ILO and other places around inclusion. And I could talk about all of that, but I'm not going to, because Deb, I think what interested me about tonight was you were asking me to reflect upon why do I do it? Where does this stuff come from? I'm not going to go back through my life history, I promise you, but I do want to introduce you to someone who's changed my life. His name's Damien. Now, I first met Damien in 1976. I was a teacher at Heidelberg Special Developmental School, and my students came to me each day from an institution called Kingsbury, and there were eight little guys, 8, 9, 10 years old, and one of them was Damien. They all had Down syndrome. They all used to come into my classroom with bowler-shaped haircuts, with snot hanging out their nose, dribble coming down, their bodies covered in bruises and bite marks, because most of the time when they weren't coming to school, they were back in a tourist unit with not enough staff to look after them, not enough to do, and they were basically abused and neglected extremely. I want to tell you about an incident that changed my life. One day, Damien came in from the bus into my classroom, and he had pinned to his chest an envelope. And in the envelope was a big, thick pair of bifocal glasses with a note attached, "Kevin, teach him to wear these glasses." So I was 22, around 22, and I was shit hot, right? I was a great teacher. My background was in teaching. I grew up working with people with intellectual disability. My mum was the director of one of the first centres in Victoria. I knew about this stuff, but Damien knew better than me. And I worked out a behaviour mod program to teach him how to wear the glasses. And he'd put the glasses down like that. He'd put them up like that. He'd throw them out the bus window. I'd go looking for them and find them in the bin. Short story, after 3 weeks, I gave up. I went to the principal and said, "Here are the friggin' glasses. I can't get him to wear them." She said, her name was Betty Dybol, very wise woman. She said, "Kevin, don't worry about it. I'll give the institution a call." And she did. She phoned up the institutional doctor, had a conversation. The doctor said, look, don't worry about it. He doesn't actually need glasses, big, thick bifocal glasses, mind you, but because he has Down syndrome, he's going to need them eventually, so we thought he should start getting used to them. Damien turned 50 last week, no glasses. I left Heidelberg SDS and became the principal. I proudly say, I think I was the youngest principal of a school ever. I was principal at the age of 24. I had this brand new special developmental school on the Murray River, and I was a special educator. I was absolute, I'm still, you know, wrapped in the power of special ed strategies and skills to affect change. We adopted Damien. You know, he one of the things he was good at, he was a very clever kid, but one thing he worked out was if he called me dad often enough, I'd start believing it. And so we adopted him. And he came to live with us in our beautiful little house in Cobram. I almost said Mildura. I grew up in Mildura, but not so in Cobram. And here's Damien. He'd been living with us for about a month. He was going to my special developmental school, this fantastic special ed facility. Damien and I, on a Sunday morning, were walking back from the local milk bar. Damien's walking along with the milk and the bread in his hands, and he's singing at the top of his voice. He can't sing, all right? But he really knows how to make a noise. We come into our street, Denise Road, Cobram, and out in the street, beautiful sunny Sunday morning, is one of my neighbours, a good guy, playing kick-to-kick football with his two sons. Damien saw the footy, dropped the milk and bread, and started running. The dad grabbed the football, kicked it over into his front yard, called his two sons inside, and basically turned their backs on him. I'd known Damien for about 4 years. Nothing the institution ever did hurt him as much as that hurt him. And I found him in on his bed, face down, too proud to let me know that he was crying. That was one of the things that led me to understand no matter what I do as a special educator, I'm never going to change the attitudes of people out there, and I'm never going to be able to build his self-esteem to understand that he is accepted to be part of the community. He will always be different no matter what I do. That, along with a lot of other issues or incidents, led me to start integrating all of our kids into regular schools in Cobram. We started in 1979. By the middle of 1981, we'd integrated all of our students into the Sacred Heart Primary, the Consolidated School, the High School, and the Kindergartens. It was working really well, I thought. I thought Damien was progressing leaps and bounds. Until one night, I get a phone call from the teacher, Damien's teacher from Sacred Heart, saying, "Oh my God, Kevin, I'm so sorry to tell you this, but we've had a complaint from the other parents. They've actually prepared a delegation. We'd like you to come along to the school tomorrow morning." I said, "What the hell? What's the problem?" Well, apparently Damien has been bullying and abusing and teasing girls, pulling their hair, swearing at them. And I thought, that's not Damien. That's not the Damien I know. He hasn't got a violent or aggressive bone in his body. And if you can make out that he's swearing, then God, you're doing well, because I can't understand what he says. Obviously I'm concerned about this. My wife, Margo, and I, we awake all night. We show up at the school the next morning. The principal comes running up and says, "Oh, Kevin, sorry to do this to you. The parents are in the room. We've just worked out. It's not your Damien they're complaining about. It's the other Damien in the classroom." But everyone had assumed that it's my Damien. I started this by saying, Damien's taught me lots of lessons. Don't judge people. His life has been full of people making judgments based on what they think they know, without bothering to spend the time to get to know him, to sit down and talk, to understand him. And we subconsciously, consciously, we're applying these limitations on people all the time because we think we know who they are. No, we don't know who they are until we actually talk to them, until we actually let them into our heart and have that conversation. And that's what inclusion is absolutely about, is opening that bit of your heart and allowing someone in to teach you a frigging lesson about life.
A thought-provoking story there from Kevin Stone on how important it is to not allow your prejudices and preconceptions cloud your judgment. And now, Ro Allen, the Victorian Commissioner for Gender and Sexuality.
So in the spirit of talking about what makes us do what we do, and I've already caucused with Justin, I'm going to do Shepherd and he's going to talk about Queensland, but that's where I met Justin many, many years ago. So I took a job in my 20s, you know, thought I was God, and up in Shepparton, and I was going to save the rural world as a youth worker. And I took a job for 12 months in the city, Greater Shepparton. And I was on a program on Wind Television. I think they've still got Wind Television, the new youth worker in town. That was a big news item then. It's just, it was like a 5-minute thing. Who was I? What was I doing in town? The next day, no lie, I had 5 gay and lesbian kids in my office going, oh, I'm so glad you've arrived. After I rubbed the tattoo off my head, I established Australia's first rural support group. Again, at the time, it was for gay and lesbian kids. Now it's all LGBTIQ, but it, you know, back then it was just, we just talked about gay, lesbian, and if you're lucky, bisexual. And it came at a cost, absolutely. And I was a bit surprised by that. I had only come out myself a year before that. And so these young people weren't actually much younger than me. So I was physically assaulted. I had my car graffitied. I had lemons thrown on the roof. And once you get a really good knock in the eye and pushed to the ground, and I won't tell you the things that were said and the threats that were made, you just, you know, there's two ways you can go. You know, you can pack up and go home, and that was absolutely an option for me, or stay. And I remember in Shepparton, it's the largest, you know, population of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander folks in Victoria, I think it still is. And I think it's the largest population of Iraqi people living outside Iraq as well. So it's got all of the tick boxes. And some of these young people that were in this group were Torres Strait Islander, and one was a fairly new arrival. And I thought, well, what will happen if I go? And I've always understood my privilege, even when I was the lowest. I mean, even everyone's worked in local government. Youth worker is way down the kick list, you know. And, you know, I was disciplined for starting the group, so I nearly lost my job. I thought, well, what am I going to do? And I met great people in the youth sector. I got the youth sector to auspice the group, and I did it on the weekends, and I did it in my own time. And still suffered. I left the council and I took a job in the Uniting Church. I was grown up in the Uniting Church and had candidated for ministry, and that didn't go so well. So anyway, there was a Uniting Church job, youth work job, and I got that. First day of work in Shepparton, there was a complaint to the moderator of the Uniting Church, that's like the head poobah, that this pedophile had been appointed to the role in Shepparton. So there was no person, there was no client, there was no incident, but there was a whole storm and ABC Compass and just the whole shebang. And you know, again, it was like, well, do you go? What you know? What am I going to do? And what if I go? And what message does that send? You know, and they are experiences that have forged and founded the work that I do. I'd not long escape from, and I call it escape from conversion practice. So that's the idea, you can pray away the gay. So there was a lot of people that wanted to pray for me and get rid of my demons. I said, thanks, take a number. You know, I have a few other issues, that's not one of them. You know, and it was a real struggle to stay, you know, and I was very, very lucky to find people and supports that weren't happy to be in the front line but were happy to support me around the edges. So if you'd told a, you know, a 19, 20-year-old young, you know, lesbian youth worker in Shepparton, you're going to grow up and be, you know, Victoria, Australia's first commissioner, you were going to have a commissioner, I would have said you were absolutely nuts. But that's what's happened. And, you know, I knew that things were not going to change on my own. And if these issues were happening for queer kids in Shepparton, they were going to be happening across Victoria, across Australia. So by stealth, I took over the chairing Youth Affairs Council of Victoria and lobbied really hard to get funding for a statewide network and pushed, you know, the heterosexual folk up front to do the advocacy, you know, because it wasn't always safe in that space. This is the only gig I've ever had where being gender diverse and queer is a bonus. So, you know, I know I've missed roles and opportunities. You don't know, but you just kind of know, you know, and you're more qualified, but somebody else got it, some heterosexual cisgender person got that role. I'm using language there, I should explain. Cisgender means that if you're allocated female at birth and you grow up and you're a woman, you're cisgender. If you're allocated male at birth and you grow up and you're a man, you're cisgender. So it's the polar opposite to transgender. So if you were allocated male at birth and grow up and you're a woman, then you're transgender or trans and gender diverse. So often use the language cisgender. It's a way of, we say homosexual, heterosexual. It's a way of saying transgender. Instead of saying normal, we say cisgender, transgender. So you can change your Facebook settings now. It was very hard for me to hide my sexuality and gender diversity. You know, we talk about privilege. I had this very strange experience the other day where I was in a forum and heard myself being quoted back to me. I was acknowledged, which is even more scary. You need to really think about what you say. But I said to this white gay man who was really aware of his privilege even within the alphabet, you know, and he said to me, you know, what should I do? And I said, you don't need to be apologetic about your privilege. And everyone in this room has that privilege, even that we're here where we are on Wurundjeri land, I should say, the Kulin Nation, that wherever we are, you know, we walk in that privilege, and that's okay. You just have to lever the shit out of it. So anyway, this was up on a slide. So, you know, that's the real guts of it. And I knew, even being, you know, beaten in Shepparton, that I had more privilege than the Aboriginal gay boy that was in the group, or the Muslim woman, my goodness, who was about to be married off to a man who was really clear she was a lesbian, you know, and then trying to find ways to bring people with you on the cause, whether that's allies, that's another part of the alphabet, LGBTIQA, could be asexual, or allies, allies being cisgender, heterosexual folks for the cause, getting allies and, you know, other people in other, you know, minority groups. I think that's been a key thing for me, to work with the Aboriginal community, to work with the new arrival community, disability community, because the LGBTI community is in all those communities. So was one thing that's right across, you know, we've got the very first young woman with Down syndrome who's transitioning and she's just been approved with hormones. You know, how fantastic is that? We live in the equality state, but that's an unthinkable thing. The work I do in the disability sector, you know, our world doesn't even think about people with disabilities having a sexuality, being heterosexual, let alone homosexual. So I like to think it's the queers making it better for everyone. And I the story that, you know, I wanted to bring about that experience is, you know, I know how privileged this role I'm in. And it, you know, it's a chance it can go to your head. You know, you live in this bubble, you know, you get invited to cocktail parties, everybody wants you to be on stage, it's all fabulous. But it's not. We know that 5 to 10% of the transgender community, if they transition at work, they lose their job, people. And they lose it in a restructure or a run out of budget, never up front, or they self pull themselves away, you know. And I think it's not hard. It's not hard to have a farewell for John on Friday and a good morning Jane tea on Monday. You know, and we're letting really qualified people go out the door. You can get an accountant for bookkeeper's rates at the moment. You know, we've got highly qualified trans people that are just unemployed because they don't, you know, fit in or pass in the binary of what we understand as feminine or what we understand as, you know, masculine. And, you know, I was asked to bring a story. And one of the things that I was asked in the second year of being commissioner was to go and do an international gig. You know, that's what you know, you get a career and then you go and talk about it on the international speaker stage. And I thought, yeah, this is something I really want to do. This is the next level. And I really thought about it. And I thought, right, well, what am I talking about? I'm talking about the Victorian government's work in LGBTI ageing. And, oh, yep, I'm the commissioner, they've written to me from Toronto, yep, I should go. And I thought about it a bit more and I thought, no, I should give my position to Brenda Appleton, who's an elder in the community, who's a trans woman, who's led the work with me and my support, and she got to Toronto. So you brought your props, which are the photo, my props are the boarding pass. It's like, you know, when do you use that privilege to lever it for others that need to come behind you? I was really, really fortunate that I had great mentors, Joan Kerner, former Premier of Victoria, me and 1,000 other people she mentored. And, you know, Joan said to me, you know, I've opened the door for you, Ro, now you need to open it for 3 women behind you. I've just expanded that to open it for 3 LGBTIQ folk behind. And I would like to think I've opened the door more than 3 times. And I tell them to open it 3 times. So if you think about the legacy of that one woman and how many doors she's opened for people, that's really important. And the types of, you know, the types of things you can do is, you know, not everyone can give up a, you know, air ticket international trip, but who do you take with you to an event? Do you take someone like you out of your organisation, or do you take someone that's going to be inspired by listening to this kind of panel? Who do you choose to mentor? You know, do you choose someone like you, or if you, you know, if you're a white, cisgender, heterosexual male over 45, incredibly privileged, and hope you all know that, do you mentor young women, a young trans woman, a gender non-binary person? I can tell you, you're going to learn more from that in a two-way experience than you're going to learn from mentoring someone that's just a younger version of you. You know, and we're not going to see change on the ASX until those directors of companies start mentoring, you know, LGBTIQ people in that space. If you don't know someone now that identifies as a pronoun they and them, just show me who knows someone that identifies as they or them. Okay, you're pretty informed. If you don't know, don't feel out of the loop, okay? You will probably know someone in the next 5 years. Somebody said to me, you know, oh, this is just fad. Well, you know, homosexuality wasn't a fad either. It just got more acceptable and more safe. And as it becomes more safe, gender diverse people have been walking in the world forever. And if you don't think that there is privilege, I understand white male privilege. I get white male privileged all the time. It's very handy when you're buying a car and they think you're a bloke. So I know what that privilege feels like. I know what it feels like to walk behind, you know, a woman in a park who's scared that I'm there. You know, it's a horrific feeling, and you kind of go, hi, I'm here, I'm going to turn left now. You know that stuff. It's what you do in the workplace. There are really good places that are doing this. I would say, just to sort of wrap up, that, you know, nights like this are great, and we hope the whole panel does. We come, we share this stuff because we hope it makes change. What I would stress to you is, it, particularly whether it's, you know, in the LGBTIQ space, I can't talk on all the others, there is so much information out there to educate yourselves. Please don't think this is an opportunity to go back to my organisation. Right, I need to get a trans person to come and speak to my organisation, because it's a voyeur way of getting that understanding. And I think that we do that a lot, and we know the basics and the fundamentals, and that there is so much to educate. It's our jobs, you know, to do that work. But I think there's lots in that for everyone. It's about making space for others at the table, as Kevin has said, and difference is great. Difference will bring so many diverse ideas, and thank you for your time.
A commanding contribution from Ro Allen, the Victorian Commissioner for Gender and Sexuality, sharing their experience of navigating the complexities of improving diversity in the Australian workforce to become a champion for those coming after them, and then passing the microphone to those who are still fighting to be heard. Our thanks to Kevin Stone and Ro Allen for sharing their perspectives with us today. If you're interested in learning more about NOUSE and how our diversity and inclusion programs and services can help you leverage the diversity of talent in your organisation, connect with us at www.nousegroup.com. Stay tuned for part 2 of this 2-part episode on tapping into the unsaid, unheard and unseen, featuring Justin Muhammad, the Victorian Commissioner for Aboriginal Children and Young People, and Jemana El-Matra, CEO of the Australian Muslim Women's Centre for Human Rights.